From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio, and we are in the midst of election coverage for election 2022. And this week, our focus is on the Republican primary in the 96th Assembly District, which encompasses, much of Monroe, Vernon, and Crawford counties in southwestern Wisconsin. And I'm joined right now by Holly Otteson Liska, who is a candidate for the Republican nomination in the 96th Assembly. Holly, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you for having me, Ezra. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Certainly. I'm glad you could make some time for us. And let me just start off by letting you introduce yourself to our listeners, your prospective voters, as it were. Tell us a little bit about your background, your profession, what makes you tick.
Yeah. So I am a homeschool mother. We have four children, and my better half and I run a custom farming business. And basically what that means is we've got a lot of equipment and we go out and we plant and harvest for farms who do not have that equipment. And so that keeps us pretty busy. That, of course, with having young children keeps you going. And I've just always been actively paying attention to politics. I was 17 years old and my best friend was a Vietnam veteran, and just learning a lot about his service and what it is that he fought for, and men and women like him, as well as growing up in a home where my dad and my grandpa were major history buffs. It's just made me feel that I, as a American, have a responsibility. And so as time's gone on, I felt that it's really important that people like me who genuinely care about the state of our nation and in this situation, you know, the state of my district, that we have to be out there doing things that are going to make a difference. And so I've spent a lot of time testifying before Senate and Assembly, and I know what it's like to feel like your voice isn't heard. I know what it feels like to just go out there, take a lot of time out of your day, and for basically the majority of people to not be adequately represented. And so I like to say I have a servant's heart. And so that's something that I think has really pushed me into this race.
And there are a couple of steps necessary. First of all, the Republican primary is on Tuesday, August 9th. And then, assuming you're successful there, the general election will be Tuesday, November 8th. And assuming you're successful there, on to the legislature, which leads me to my next question. If you are ultimately elected, what would your top priority as a legislator be?
Those are good questions. So, well, obviously in the 96th district, agriculture, it's a very rural community, those three counties. And so there's a lot going on right now regarding these allegedly green initiatives. Now, me personally, I actually do appreciate some of that stuff. I think the intentions are good, but in terms of being a farmer and seeing practical application, that is what's lacking there. And then the long-term implications. So that's something that I think we would need to be looking at from the Republican side of things, because we need to be proactive versus reactive. So we need to be drafting legislation that would help protect our farmers. Another thing that I think is necessary is something that's just been brought to my attention recently from a woman who's actually not in my district, but I know that women in my district have been affected by this because of the statistics that would tell us that this is true. Bereavement. So women given maternity leave, you know, that's very important that women have that time at home with their newborn babies. But bereavement is also a very important thing that I think goes unnoticed. And so that's a very traumatic experience for both men and women when they lose a child or lose a pregnancy. And so that's something I have a heart for, and I'm looking for people who are experts on that and what that may look like so they can guide me in drafting adequate legislation.
You talked about what you called the allegedly green initiatives. And for people who are not as rurally located and may not be familiar with how agriculture works, what are some of the kinds of things that you're talking about when you point out those initiatives?
Sure. So right now, there's a lot of push for reducing your carbon imprint or your carbon footprint, right? So it's very hard for farmers today. They are already struggling as it is. And so a lot of those things would devastate our farmers. And it's not feasible in terms of application for them. So that's where I think you need to have people who are experts on both sides of the conversation coming together. And this is where those hearings are so valuable, because a lot of times the way things get drafted, you know, people will file amendments to that legislation. They'll propose amendments, and then it will change as it goes on. It evolves very much. And so I think that's where we need to open up the conversation so that we can get farmers who can come forth and say, hey, this is how this has already impacted me. And if things go on to continue in this way, we will cease to exist. And, you know, just kind of looking at farming today versus, so I'm 30 years old. When I was a kid, the road that I grew up on, there was farms from top to bottom. And when I was a teenager, that was cut in half. As of today, I believe there's only one, maybe two of those farms still operating. And so it's less and less family farms are able to perform in a way that would be able to provide for their families. And so when these things like regarding climate change come and affect their ability to operate, it doesn't take much to wipe out the last few standing.
Let's keep talking about the economy, less specifically the agricultural economy, and just more generally the whole economy, and especially the way people experience it right now. A lot of talk about inflation, a lot of concerns in people's homes and families. What steps can be taken at a state level in the state legislature to address rising inflation and fears that people have about recession?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is something I actually ask our current legislators. And I've been asking a lot of people who are well-versed in the economy what we can do. And I get a lot of different recommendations or examples. And to be quite honest with you, I'm very concerned about that, what we can do on a state level, because a lot of it seems to be more federally controlled, that we can really make a difference. One of the things we talked about was the gas tax. Do you suspend the gas tax? Well, in rural Wisconsin, look at that. That's a double-edged sword. Could that help a little bit? Sure, it could help a little bit, but look at our roads. So where we would take away, we would also be taking away from the quality of roads that we have. So, I mean, I believe that God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. And so I am more than willing to listen to the recommendations that the people in my district have for me. I mean, for me, the cause of inflation is very simple as to why we're here today. But on a state level, there's such a limited amount of things that we can do. I can't tell the president, hey, go turn on the pipeline. You know, let's utilize our reserves that we have here. So that's something that, like I said, I am willing to learn along the way. And I'm pretty quick. I learn pretty fast. And we're devastated by it as well. And I would just like to see something practical, something reasonable, and that's really going to benefit the people of Wisconsin go into play right away.
You talked about reaching out to current legislators and seeking their input on things. Seems to be something that we see less and less of these days, especially among people maybe crossing party lines to learn what are the concerns that keep you from supporting my legislation, or what are the concerns that keep me supporting from your legislation. Where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation on big issues like natural resource management, or a lot of our areas are experiencing questions about PFAS and other contaminants contaminations in drinking water and things like that.
Yeah. That's where I think the experts are very important. These people, and not just the experts, but also the people who are affected coming and testifying. So that's something that I think lacks in the legislative body. We can go and we can fill up the room in the hearings and overflow rooms and people in the rotunda of the Capitol and still have that committee vote against everything that we came to support. And so there's issues there of the legislators not listening to their constituents. But as you said prior, there's this other issue of the right versus left, the Republicans versus the Democrats. And I think that's why there's such stagnance. Nothing gets done. Because let's be honest here, it's not like the Democrats don't have any good ideas and that the Republicans have all the good ideas or vice versa. So I think it's really important that we work together. We approach these conversations diplomatically. I mean, I look at some of our legislative body today and the way that they treat each other is terrible. I would expect better behavior from my 13 and 11 year old children. And so that's one thing that I seek to do if I do get elected, is to treat people on both sides of the aisle with the same respect and with the same respect that I hope to be treated with. Now, I know that that's not how it always goes, that sometimes when you stand up for what is right, that you're going to be persecuted or challenged or your reputation may be dragged through the mud. And that's fine. Because at the end of the day, we just have to do what is right. And especially when it's on behalf of a larger body of people than just yourself.
In the recent Dobbs decision, the Supreme Court of the United States has overturned Roe versus Wade, which is a longstanding decision on abortion in the country. And so for many years, abortion-related questions were more directed toward federal candidates for office than state candidates for office. But here we are, and it's suddenly a very relevant issue for candidates for state office. Where do you see the Wisconsin legislature, especially the assembly, which you're vying to be part of, where do you see, what action should they or shouldn't they take regarding abortion now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned?
Well, I'm very pro-life, and there's a little backstory to that. I'm just going to give you this quick so that I can come back to this in the end.
Sure, sure.
I used to be very pro-choice because I always believed that it was all about women's reproductive rights and healthcare. And somebody had challenged me one day to do a little research on this. And they had sent me some links, and I was eager to do the research because I do love to research. It's something that I've done since I was a teenager. And so it's kind of strange to say out loud to some people, but while my friends were having fun and doing all these things, I would be out there all night long, quite often, reading medical journals and looking up different literature on Google Scholar. So that's something I feel very strongly about and very much enjoy. Anyway, so while I was researching some of this stuff, I became what I would say grossly informed on the issue of abortion. I learned about the industry and what it really entails, and then also the lack of care for the men and women, especially women, who suffer from post-abortion syndrome. And then, you know, knowing so many women myself who have been affected by this and the way that they are just not taken care of really breaks my heart, because they thought that they were just going to go get this procedure and that the worst of their troubles is behind them, when really they're now suffering for the rest of their lives because of this post-abortion syndrome. And so I think education is really important. And also, I think it's important for us to utilize systems that are already in place. So we have adoption. I know way too many people who are infertile or cannot have children for whatever reason that want to and would make excellent parents. But the amount of money it costs, the time and resources, it's so sad because, like I said, they would make wonderful parents, but they're being held back from doing so when there are children who need moms and dads and foster care and what have you. And so I think that's one thing that we need to be looking at is streamlining adoption while obviously still vetting our parents, ensuring that the families are going to provide safe homes for these children. And then in terms of abortion, there's a little bit of misunderstanding about who is able to get an abortion and why. So people always say, well, what about in the event of, say, an ectopic pregnancy? Well, I have a family member who had an ectopic pregnancy just a couple of years ago. She did not go to Planned Parenthood and get an abortion. It's an entirely different procedure. So in the event of saving the mother's life, quite often, I would say, I can't say the numbers to be specific, but I do know that more often than not, there is procedures provided by the hospital to ensure that the mother's safety is no longer in question. And the goal isn't there to go harvest this child, their organs, what have you, and do whatever it is that they do with these aborted babies. So I think there's a lack of education about there. There's a narrative there that needs to be challenged a little bit. But again, it goes with, we can't have this right versus left, Republicans versus Democrats. We have to be willing to put our political biases aside and really think about the women and men who are going to be affected by these decisions. So I think there's going to be a long road ahead of us in the state assembly and the Senate. But I'm really hoping and praying that when we come together, we can do what is right for the people of Wisconsin.
On the issue of education, especially public education, strong schools are a key to healthy economy and workforce, and sort of providing a basic level of education is important to any parent who has children, whether they attend public schools or private schools. What should the role of state government be in education? How can the state legislature act to ensure that each child is presented with meaningful education options?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, another double-edged sword here is a lot of the issues we have today in our public education system are a result of government involvement in our public schools. So where I can appreciate the funding, that's really important that we adequately fund public school systems. I think it's getting to a point here where we're applying political biases and things, kind of rewriting history and all these things that are really hurting our children. It's really detrimental. That's why I pulled my kids out of public school a couple years pre-COVID, because I was just so devastated by what I had saw in their education, in the curriculum that was being utilized. I think there's very obvious things. Funding is important. You know, we want to ensure that every child has access to education because, as you said, and very well put, that determines the likelihood of a successful outcome and their ability to function in our society and their futures. But we also see right now just failing public school systems. And so I think it's important that parents really should be involved in their child's education. I know when I took my kids out of the public school system, I wasn't sure how the teachers were going to handle that. When I sat down with them and I asked them, you know, where do you see my children right now? What do they need? And what advice do you have for me as a parent taking the education into my own hands? And they were so appreciative of my investment in their education. They said, we wish more parents were like you. And I was really floored by the amount of time that we spent homeschooling and how much we accomplished in that short amount of time compared to their peers who are in public school who seem to be struggling or not accomplishing as much. And so I think it's a very nuanced situation, but ultimately I think the government's role is strictly funding, and that is it. Because our educators, I mean, there's a lot of drama right now between parents and educators and the whole system. But overall, our educators are very good at what they do. And when given the tools to do so and the freedom to do their jobs. They do it very well. And so I think it's a matter of the state really hearing what the educators and the parents have to say about the issue of public education.
We're speaking with Holly Otteson Liska, who's a Republican candidate. She's running for the Republican nomination in the 96th Assembly. That election is on Tuesday, August 9th. Holly, I want to spend the last couple minutes here with the last few minutes we have giving you an opportunity to share more specifically in this race some of the differences that you have with your opponent. Not only do you have an opponent in this election, your opponent is currently the incumbent, Lauren Oldenburg. And I'm wondering what sets you apart from Lauren, and why should people give your candidacy another look?
Sure. Well, I want to preface by saying this. I really like Lauren. I think he's a very nice guy. And some of the things he's done, I would certainly emulate. But I think the thing that really sets us apart is our position on a couple of things. And that is my stance on medical freedom. It's something that's really put me into politics to begin with, quite frankly. I've spent about a decade just trying to protect and preserve our religious, philosophical, and medical exemptions for not just vaccines, but any kind of medication or surgery, what have you. So that's something that I think sets us apart. And also election integrity. I know that when we have these, the GOP meetings or any kind of forum where people are given an opportunity to ask their candidates questions, they number one issue that seems to be coming up is, what about the elections? What are we going to do about election integrity? And I get it. It really requires you to stick your neck out. And now I'm not saying that Lauren wouldn't or can't, because I really do think he's a stand-up guy. But I think that's something that I know to be true about myself, is I am willing to stand alone when that is the right thing to do, because it's just, it takes one person. And I've made a difference in my own communities in the past, and it has required me to stand alone sometimes and look like the crazy person. But after a while, when people start to catch on, like, hey, maybe there is an issue here. Hey, this is impacting my life now. Then all of a sudden you have a community of people who are willing to work together. And so what really sets us apart is our history is a little different. And so, but what makes us the same, I think, is also very valuable as well. And so ultimately, I'd say the thing about my candidacy that makes me unique is my position on the Second Amendment, my support for law enforcement, medical freedom, my pro-life status, and overall just, I'm kind of a Jill of all trades. So, and I, like I said, I like to research. If I'm driving a tractor, there's probably a medical lecture, World Health Organization, World Economic Forum, some kind of annual meeting, CDC hearing, what have you, playing in the background. So I don't know many people like me that do that stuff. So.
Well, Holly Otteson Liska, candidate for the Republican nomination in the 96th, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ezra.
If you'd like to find out more about this race that we're covering today, you can listen to both interviews on our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. WPR.org/newsmakers. And you can check out more election coverage from across Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org/election2020. WPR.org/election2020. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back in just a minute. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studio in Southwest Wisconsin on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. And today we're focusing on the 96th Assembly race. We're going to hear from the Republicans today running for their party's nomination. Last week we heard from the Democrats running for the Democratic nomination in the 96th. And specifically joining me right now is the incumbent, the current Assemblyman in the 96th. It's Republican Lauren Oldenburg. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us on Newsmakers.
Well, thank you for having me on and opportunity here to, you know, introduce myself. Like I said, my name is Lauren Oldenburg. I did serve in for the last 4 years as a state representative for the 96th district. In the past, I served as the town board chairman and a town supervisor back in the mid 90s for a local township that I live in. Also I've been past president and served on the Chaseburg Settings Board for 19 years, the Westbury Creamery Board for 14 years, also president of that board. So lifelong residence where I live. I'm a fourth generation farmer. Been in family for 144 years. Graduated in Barocco High School in 1984. Went on to college for 3 years, came back. Hey, farming is my life. So that's what I decided until 4 years ago. And I said, well, I thought I'd throw my hat into politics. So, and I have enjoyed the last 4 years. And it's been very, very learning, great experiences. And it's been fun helping out constituents and municipalities or whoever needs help and stuff. So.
So let me ask you about this. You've had 4 years to kind of get to know how things work and to sort of work your way through the system of acting on behalf of your constituents there in the assembly. So if you are reelected, if voters send you back to Madison, what's your top priority going to be this time around?
Well, like I said before, my top priority is if whatever the constituents need, you know, and I enjoy that part. I always call them whims as far as helping out constituents or municipalities or, you know, with issues that come up and stuff like that. But I've worked in the past here. Youth apprenticeship has kind of been my forte. You know, last two budgets, I helped put more and more dollars in youth apprenticeship. This last budget or last session, I was able to get a bill, AB 220, signed into law, which requires all school districts to have kids coming into high school say, hey, youth apprenticeship is available. And so now they have to do that and stuff like that. And if you watch the Governor Evers TV ads, he signed AB 220 on his youth apprenticeship. That actually is a bill that I authored. And so it was a bipartisan bill. So I still continue to look forward to working with that. Also farmland preservation. Last two sessions, I actually got both set the farmland preservation, a tax credit for farmers to do good farming practices. Got it all the way through the committees, but couldn't get it on the floor, couldn't get a vote on it. So I'll probably do that again next year and hopefully see where I can go from there. And also been working with DOT, DNR, Wetland Association, Trout Unlimited to try to mitigate some of these flooding issues in the Coulee regions. So the same cost does not happen every year. So those are some of the top priorities that we can got to continue to work on and any other subjects that come up in the state of for Western Wisconsin.
The economy is front of mind right now for a lot of your voters, I got to imagine, because that's front of mind in the communities that I've been in. Topic of big conversation, inflation, what's going to happen with the cost of goods and services? How is my family going to be able to afford it? Is there anything that can be done on state government? I know this is a big national issue, but can the state government do anything to address the inflation issue or how Wisconsin families face that?
Well, I think, you know, kind of what we did in the last budget here, we gave a $3 billion tax cut to individuals, you know. So I think we're going into a very good revenue situation in the state of Wisconsin through the next budget. You know, we got excess dollars there. I think we will have to address, you know, if we can give more and more dollars back into the individual's pocket, you know, and that definitely will help as a tax credit, tax break. You know, we have to give maybe help through childcare. I mean, can we give these young families some kind of tax break or some kind of credit for childcare expenses, you know, somehow. I think that is a big issue, and that would have solved a lot of the problems going on here with the economy is the workforce. You know, we're short on workforce right now and workers. So we, you know, those little things that we can address at the state level, like you said, we can't can't address a lot of the big issues. There are federal issues, but we can do the little small issues that affect the day-to-day family living. And what we've done in broadband expansion grants, you know, especially in Western Wisconsin, we're moving into Crawford County, we're moving in Monroe County, which I represent that, you know, for fiber optics, and to get these broadbands in there. So maybe people don't have to drive to work, you know, they can work from home, you know, and that definitely saves dollars, especially what gas prices are right now.
One area that the state legislature can have an impact on economically is the legislature can do for Wisconsin's farmers, and that's an issue that you've already talked about is important to you. Talk about what your priorities are going to be if you're reelected in terms of providing support for Western Wisconsin's farmers.
Well, I addressed a little bit of that in the farmland preservation, but I was happened to be on the environmental committee last year, also on the ag committee, that we got kind of changed the, you know, practices maybe of farming as far as that goes for cover crops. I think we gave passed a bill that if they have crop insurance, they get $5 per acre back if they use cover crops. So I think that's kind of a two-win process. We helped the environment. We also put dollars back into the farmers, which improve soil health, you know, and get better productivity in your crops like that. So those little things we can do. I know last year in 2020, a few of my colleagues down there have farm backgrounds. We wrote a letter to Governor Evers to get ARPA fund, $50 million ARPA fund to the farmers. You know, everyone got pretty much was able to get a $3,500 check, you know, if you got within that income level. So those are a few things. And also we got to protect, you know, at these times we're getting good prices for our grains, but our input costs so much, you know, between fuel and fertilizer and stuff like that. So anywhere we can give maybe a tax break or tax credit a little bit on the farmers would definitely help.
You talked about the bill that you were successful in passing being a bipartisan effort that you, a Republican, wrote and sponsored, and that is now being touted by our governor, who's a Democrat. What other opportunities do you see for bipartisan cooperation? People talk about how divided our country is and how divided our state government is in particular. But what opportunities do you see to work with others across the aisle?
Well, you know, like anything with like youth apprenticeship or childcare, I think we all know those issues are huge. I would like to see more, you know, going across the aisle on conservation issues. We got a few of these issues, you know, like cover crops is a conservation issue. But I think we all understand that, you know, we want to keep the soil where it's supposed to be. We want to keep flooding issues to the minimum and stuff like that. I think those can be, we can find some bipartisan issues there, but everyone say we are divisive down there, but those are the ones make the headlines. You know, 85-90% of the bills that get passed or signed into law are bipartisan. You know, we both sign on, you know, both, you know, because it goes by district, every district has different issues. And so, yes, most bills are passed bipartisan wise. Biggest thing is the headline issues that kind of sucks all the life out of there. And we're, you know, and I say we're not as bad as the federal side. I mean, seems like there's more across the aisle work. But I think the communication definitely has to be improved between the legislators and the governor, both sides of the aisle. I mean, the lack of communication between the governor and us is been evident. And I think the state of Wisconsin residents are losing out.
On another big issue that's been part of the national conversation, it's the Supreme Court overturn of Roe versus Wade, and that takes the abortion issue and puts it squarely in the responsibility of state legislatures across the country, and Wisconsin's law relating to abortion is from obviously pre Roe v. Wade, and it's in fact from over 100 years ago. I'm wondering what action you think the state government should or shouldn't take to clarify that issue in any way, or what they should do to either protect access to abortion or to restrict it and answer some of the, you know, modern questions that modern medicine has raised about that issue?
I think we definitely should have to take it up, you know, because like you say, that law has been in effect since almost the time of, you know, inception of the state of Wisconsin. And I think it should come forward. You know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how it's written, how, it, you know, number one, protecting a mother's life is very important. But you also have to take, bring in consideration of, you know, between incest and rape. I think that's something that we have to be considered on, you know, so, but I also would like, if we're going to tie that part of it into it, I think we have to tie the penalties of those two situations into it too, you know, to deter, you know, that, you know, if someone does, you know, is accused of rape, we don't want them out there relatively quickly. So, you know, the penalty has to be also raised in the same process, the same mindset. So, but definitely I would take that in consideration, you know, especially the incest and rape end of it. And I think quite a few of my colleagues probably down there will also consider that. But I won't speak for them, but that's something that I believe that we as legislators will have to address.
Aside from those issues, where do you line up on the issue of abortion rights?
I'm a pro guy.
Say that again. You cut out there for a second.
I'm pro-life. I was and been endorsed by Right to Life, and I fall in that issue. You know, killing babies are wrong, but it's also not the person's fault if you were raped or incest, you know, that it's not the woman's fault there too. So we have to definitely take consideration of those situations.
Let's talk about education. I know most kids in Wisconsin go to public schools, and a lot of parents are concerned about the quality of the education that their kids are going to receive there. Other parents opt for other educational opportunities and support things like vouchers and things like that. Where do you fall on education issues and how to provide the best access to the highest quality education throughout Wisconsin for all of the kids, regardless of their economic status?
Well, I think school choice has been a very good for the state of Wisconsin. And we saw a lot of it during COVID. And, you know, if the parents was not happy with the school board decisions, you know, an administration of a school, they had the opportunity to go to a different school where they like. And I think it, number one, school choice actually makes the school board be accountable, because if they're not doing a good job, you know, they're going to lose students. And that's how we get, that's how funding is. And one thing we did in the state budget is we 2/3 funded the school districts, you know, out there as far as student wise. So funding still has to be available for public education, but I also believe they got to be accountable, you know, across the board. I mean, as far as testing out, making sure the kids are getting taught the right things. And it all comes down to the parents got to be involved in knowing what their kids are being taught, you know, and if things are being taught that aren't, you know, should be taught, I mean, that has to be addressed. But I believe private public education is very important, and it comes down to the parents' choice. And I think we have to give the ability for the parents to make the choice of where they want to send their kids.
So I want to give you a couple of opportunities to frame your candidacy. The first is what other issues are important that you might want to raise voters' attention to that I haven't had a chance to ask you about?
Well, number one, you know, roads have been kind of, I know when I ran in 2018, it was roads, roads, roads. That's all we talked about, seemed like, in that campaign. That's been kind of been put on the back burner for a lot of the issues that have been going on, especially social issues. But I think roads are still an issue out here. In West Wisconsin, we are getting more roads getting done and improved. But going forward with the cost of materials, you know, is that going to be a hindrance for some of these roads getting redone and or getting fixed or updated and upgraded? So we have to keep our pulse on that issue. I think it's very important for our rural roads because equipment's there getting bigger. You know, tourism is huge out here. It's a growing thing. So we have, and those people like good roads, and that's what brings people here. So also touched on broadband. I mean, that's a subject I'm going to still keep pushing forward because of, you know, once we get the all my district in fiber optic or high-speed internet, that will bring tourism, jobs to Western Wisconsin. That's very important. And also promote tourism. I get a lot of calls on UTVs, UTV access to roads. And so some local communities I've already been working with them. So they're able to get the local gas station. So that's something I'm very interested in, the Iowa law that just got passed in UTVs. So it's something I'm maybe looking to go into the next session and see if we maybe can copy something like that in the state of Wisconsin.
You're running in this election. It's a primary election to see who's going to get the Republican nomination. You're running against a woman named Holly Otteson Liska, and I know you're both Republicans, and I've had the opportunity to talk to both of you. But I want to give you an opportunity to let voters know by talking to us about what separates you from your opponent in this race.
Well, number one, I've been around all my life here in Western Wisconsin. You know, I grew up here. I do not know her background, but that's something I've been very, very proud of, being, you know, my farm and my family farm, living, be able to live there and still be there and still be able to do that. And also my job here to state Wisconsin as a state representative. So, I mean, I'm very accessible. And you can talk to anyone out here in my district. Anyone can come up to talk to me any time of the day or night, seems to be, but I'm always will answer the phone call. My yeses are yes and my nos are nos, and I'll never belittle anyone. And that's who I am. And that's that's my character. And I want to stay with that. So.
All right. Well, Lauren Oldenburg is the incumbent state assembly person in the 96th, and he is running for his party's nomination for re-election. Lauren, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today. I appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That's Lauren Oldenburg. He is the incumbent in the 96th Assembly District at the moment, and he is running for his party's renomination to that office in the primary election that is Tuesday, August 9th. That's coming up this Tuesday. Coming up next, we turn our attention to a fight of a different kind. We're talking to Nate Coleman Jr. about his organization in La Crosse. It's called The Good Fight, and it's a youth development organization. We're going to revisit that conversation with Nate next here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio. And from talking about the fight to represent Wisconsinites in the halls of the state legislature to a different kind of fight altogether, we're turning our attention toward a youth development organization in La Crosse called The Good Fight. And they're online at thegoodfight.club. Their founder, Nate Coleman Jr., talked to me a couple of months ago about his organization and about how it all got started.
The Good Fight was kind of, to be perfectly honest, and an accident that was born out of a necessity. A friend of mine, his daughter, was kind of struggling in school, and I offered boxing as kind of a out for her anxiety and anger and all that kind of stuff. And she started to learn boxing, and then I realized she was behind in school. At the time, I was the coach for the UWL Boxing Club. And so I told the club members, who I wasn't charging to coach, that the way they would pay me was to tutor this kid. So her grades began to get better, and she was enjoying boxing. Well, one kid turned into two turned into four. And suddenly I have all these kids. And the place where I was at, we were doing a day membership. The guy basically came to me and said, hey, I can't have all these kids running around. So then I decided, well, maybe I needed to find a new space. We ended up finding a spot in the basement of the King and Fifth building. We did some cleaning and helped a guy who was opening a gym down there. And he gave us a space, and we outgrew that space. And we moved to J Street, and then we outgrew that space. And now we're at 118 6th Street North in about a 8,000 square foot building. And we've just grown and grown.
Starting out as just, you know, helping out one friend's daughter, you now offer not only boxing, you've got different kinds of tutoring and all kinds of opportunities for kids to get a little help with school or whatever else is troubling them, a food pantry, all kinds of things going on at the Good Fight. And how long have you been working on all this in La Crosse?
The Good Fight's been open for 5.5 years. We'll August 2nd will be 6 years old.
Nate, the conspicuous part of the idea, it's part of your logo. It was part of your very first student that you helped. It's all about the boxing. And I know your whole organization isn't all about boxing anymore as you've gotten into so many things. But for people who are less familiar with how boxing works as a sport, it can seem counterintuitive that you're helping people with aggression, with anxiety, with all these things by teaching them how to fight. Talk about how boxing as a sport and that context of the rules and the strategy and all of that turn out to be a teaching tool.
Listen, a lot of people don't understand that in life, life is kind of a fight. In life, you're going to get punched. You're going to have something that happens to you. You lose a loved one, a relationship breaks up, you lose a job, whatever. And it's not that those things happen. It's how you respond. The same thing in a boxing ring. Boxers may take a hard punch. They go down. You take a deep breath. You get up and you remember, you know what? I came here to win. I came here to be a champion. You put your hands up and you move forward. The concept of learning that you can deal with adversity, the concept of learning that things happen that may be out of your control, they're in your control. It's your reaction to things. So something happens to you. You can get through it. You can respond in a way that shows that you're a champion, that you have a championship heart, that you have a desire to win. And that is a lot of what we teach. A lot of the kids who train and do boxing training never spar, never actually box another person. Many of them are just punching bags or doing mitt work with coaches. But they learn the desire to succeed. They learn how to push through the physical pain of punching when you're tired, of moving forward through something that's difficult. And that's the lesson that most of these kids get. They learn to be a champion. You train like a champion and you become a champion.
When did you first learn about boxing?
When I was a kid and in trouble. There was a young, I guess he was younger then, but he was a school counselor, and he told my mom that he had a after-school program. That's all he said. He never told her what it was. And he had a boxing gym. He didn't have all the other things that we've added. It was just literally a boxing gym. And so in going there, it gave me an out, somewhere to be. And he set expectations. And I didn't want to disappoint my coach. I wanted to meet those expectations. I did the things he asked me to do.
You said you were a kid in trouble and you found this boxing. What impact do you think that had on the rest of your path forward?
I think the biggest impact was that I found someone who believed in me and also demanded something from me. He demanded that I show character. He demanded that I do my absolute best.
In terms of the community reaching out to you, are there ways that the community can help out? Do you look for volunteers? I know everybody's always looking for funding as well.
On our website, there is an area for volunteers. As far as funding, one of the challenges of being the little guy, so to speak, in town is that I don't have a staff that's writing grants. And I don't, so fundraising and donors, are very important to us to fill our budget and to make sure that we can take care of kids here. And while it is $25 a month, that should not be a discouragement. We do have scholarships. As long as we can turn on the lights and open the doors, we welcome kids here. So that shouldn't be a barrier either.
That's Nate Coleman Jr., the founder of The Good Fight. They're online at thegoodfight.club. That's where you can find more information about them. If you'd like to find more information about our show, we're online. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next week for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.